Last Sunday, in response to Simon Peter's declaration of faith, "You are the Christ, the Son of the God, the Living One," Jesus gave him a new identity, the rock on which I will build my church, and the gates of death will not prevail against her. And he talked about the kingdom of heaven and the keys of glory for opening and shutting. Pretty cool. And then, somehow, for some reason, Jesus starts talking about the necessity for him to do four things: to go to Jerusalem, to suffer greatly, to be killed, and be raised. And then things get really dicey. Peter starts feeling his oats after being named the rock, right? He's feeling like, "I've been promised the heavenly keys." So he jumps forward again. But this time there's no confession of faith. This time he wants to overrule Jesus. You know, Jesus had just appointed him the equivalent of prime minister in his church. The prime minister is supposed to act with the mind and the heart of the king he serves. But this one does the opposite. You can almost kind of wonder, you know, if Jesus got it right here. Not just did he choose the right person, but more importantly, should he have waited to bestow this authority on Peter until after the resurrection? More importantly, even after the Pentecost event, after he's given the Spirit to Peter, then give him the authority that the Spirit will enable him to use rightly. Doesn't that make a lot more sense? Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I would do if I were in charge. But somehow, for some reason, the logic of God is different, right? Maybe, I don't know exactly. Maybe it's because you have to be humbled first before you can exercise authority. Or maybe it's because he wants Peter to be super clear, and all of us as well, that it's not by your own strength, big guy. It's not by your strength. It's by the Lord's strength, the strength of the Holy Spirit. And so what happens here in this gospel today is almost like this dance, like a violent dance that gets played out. You know, Jesus is standing here talking to the 12 and pointing to Jerusalem. I have to go there. I have to suffer and be killed and then be raised. And it's almost like Peter leaps forward and grabs him by the coat collar, his tunic, and pulls him aside. Starts wrestling him over to the side. "No, no, this cannot be. I will not let this happen." And Jesus, just as firmly, right, turns and pulls back to get back in the lead. And just as firmly commands Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. Go away behind me, Satan." Now, back during the temptations in the desert, towards the beginning of this gospel, Jesus had said almost the exact same words. There he said, "Get Satan, go away Satan." The great Satan was also trying to pull him off of his way to the cross. But here, though, Jesus adds, "Behind me. Go away behind me, Satan." The great Satan is beyond conversion, but Peter is not, and you and I are not. Jesus knows that. He knows that he wants us to be his disciples, to follow him. The word Satan literally means an obstacle. "Go away behind me, because you're blocking my way. You're an obstruction to the divine plan. You're thinking like human beings. You're trying to avoid the cross, which is the only way to redemption." Do we, the disciples, ever get in the way of Jesus? Ever get in the way of the cross being operative in someone's life? You know, I can have the tendency to want to do a lot of work for others, to make life easier for them, right? That's a good thing, isn't it? But am I actually getting in the way of their conversion? Sometimes we need to struggle through tough things. Sometimes we need not to abandon someone to their struggle, but to let it be their struggle. And then we accompany them and pray for them and support them, because suffering isn't always a bad thing. The suffering of Jesus redeemed the world. And when we suffer while holding on to our faith in Jesus, our suffering too can become transformative, even redemptive. When Jesus goes on then in that gospel to say that whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, one way to think about that is to think of our life like a seed, right? Unless I lose that seed into the ground, where it will be broken open and lost, it'll never give life. If I hold that seed in my hand, the seed will never grow. It'll never give life. It'll be a complete waste of a seed. Our lives must embrace the suffering and the crosses that come our way, because those are the means that Jesus uses to transform us. You know, oftentimes, our suffering can be the result of sin or bad decisions. But even those, when sincerely repented and confessed and forgiven, can yield to growth that would never have happened otherwise. St. Paul, in that second reading, writes that we will be transformed by the renewal of our mind. Or another way to say that is, we'll be transformed as we begin to think not as human beings do, but as God does. The logic of God includes the logic of the cross. But notice that Jesus never mentions his dying without also mentioning his rising. The cross is necessary, but it's never the end, and it's never for its own sake. The cross is a necessary means for transformation, a necessary means for fighting that great Satan, who, by the way, is terrified of the cross. Terrified of the cross. Christians can never go wrong when we embrace the cross as disciples of Jesus, following Jesus, not trying to lead the way with our own brilliant plans about how we're going to conquer Satan and evil. That's a great recipe for a face plant. But rather humbly following the divine plan, humbly carrying the cross in the footsteps of the divine master. And doing that, in our first reading we heard, there were times when Jeremiah felt duped, when in the suffering that came his way, he got so disappointed and discouraged, which is precisely why Jesus always reminds us that suffering with love, for the sake of love, will always lead to a life, to life, and to glory in the resurrection. When Peter rejected the logic of the cross, he became a stumbling block, not a rock. Now later, after the resurrection, after Pentecost, Peter will not only embrace the cross, he himself was crucified. But he'll write in the first letter of Peter about becoming not a stumbling stone, but a living stone, because he learned to follow the one who is alive, who's the way, the truth, and the life. He learned to follow him even to the cross and to death. So here's the homework for the week, just very simply, practically. If you have a cross necklace, wear it more prominently this week. If you have a cross in your pocket, hold it, embrace it, kiss it. Let it be the topic of a conversation. Let the logic of the cross be your logic this week.